the back of the field.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning after a big day of racing yesterday across the country, highlighted, of course, by the Pennsylvania Derby. We will talk some Parks racing this morning, obviously, and a little bit later on we'll be joined by my summertime Sunday morning colleague, Steve Bick. He was down at Parks this weekend, so I thought we'd get some firsthand comments on the Derby and the Cotillion and whatnot from Steve. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. Before that, I'll take a look at some of the stakes at Belmont and Churchill. We'll go up to Woodbine because Pink Lloyd was back up at Woodbine looking to get his first victory of this year as a venerable 9-year-old. So we'll take a look at that one as well. So plenty to talk about on this Sunday morning. And I will start by reminding you that you can stop by the Clubhouse Racebook today and enjoy all the football action and all the racing action as well. You can do that every Sunday throughout the NFL season, the Clubhouse Racebook. Wear a jersey, you get in for free. You can win a jersey if you put your name on one of the squares and potentially also win a restaurant voucher. Always a lot of fun. Football and racing every Sunday throughout the NFL season right here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right, let me just see if I can quickly, because I have some of the buyers from yesterday. I don't have all of the buyers. Let me just see if I can quickly find some of those out there on Twitter, and it looks like I can pull up some more of the buyers. Here we go. There are the Pennsylvania. I don't see the New York buyers, however, but that's okay. We'll give you the ones we can give you and leave the others for a little bit later on. But we will start out with the New York races, however, from yesterday. And one of those, despite a small field and a short price, was one of the more intriguing races of the day because the Kelso yesterday featured Life is Good. Life is Good started the career out in Southern California with Bob Baffert, looked to potentially be one of the three-year-olds of the year after having gone 3-for-3, won the Sham, won the San Felipe earlier this year, and then went to the sidelines. And then the Baffert situation happened. The owners moved the horse over to Todd Pletcher, and the horse made a comeback up at Saratoga in one of the races that highlighted a fabulous meet up there, the Jerkins, where Life is Good faced off with Jackie's Warrior, and they had the ding-dong battle that went all the way down the stretch with Jackie's Warrior just edging Life is Good. Life is Good came back yesterday in the Kelso, the one-turn mile down at Belmont, and went off as the 5 cent to a dollar favorite. I thought Chance It was probably, if you were looking for an alternative, that was the one I would have gone towards in the four-horse field. Chance It pulled up on the back stretch. So at that point, it was just a paid workout for Life is Good, the number two horse here. And as you can see, the chart margin will wind up to be 5.5 lengths. And again, it was more of a paid workout than anything. So an impressive performance yesterday for Life is Good. After the race, Todd Pletcher was saying, talk it over with the owners a little bit. And the thought was, dirt mile for the Breeders' Cup, but tossed out also maybe the Classic, but was concerned with the lack of seasoning. This was only, again, career start number 5, career win number 4. Looked very good so far. But again, we'll see what Life is Good has up next because so far has, looked like a very special runner and
did it again yesterday at Belmont in the Kelso. A little bit later on the card at Belmont. And if you were following the one sheet yesterday, I had the eight bagger on top, including Life is Good, the early pick five. We had the early pick five cold. And, Life is Good paid 210. There was another fairly obvious short, $3 price maybe. But we had a couple of double-digit horses in that early pick five, too. Again, the top picks were cold with that early pick five. And for 50 cents, you got $411 back. And then we added three more winners on the day. So the eight bagger yesterday, if you were playing along with the one sheet, which you can catch every day, every racing day at CapitalOTB.com. Also, you could have maybe followed the picks from the handicappers report a little bit earlier in the day. But later in the card, race 10 was the Athenia yesterday, grade 3 event for the fillies and mares on the turf. And again, we had another short-priced favorite, Pocket Square. I thought Miss Tehran was, to me, they were fairly similar talent-wise. They were separated a little bit in the odds, 45 cents to the dollar for Pocket Square and 5-2 for Miss Tehran. But it looked like, at worst, it would be a Chad Brown exact in here, and that's how it played out. The betting public was right with the 45 cent to a dollar for a Pocket Square, because it's a pretty easy victory. The number four is Pocket Square, just kind of loping up there, gets the jump on the barn mate. Miss Tehran is the number two. Chart margin again, 2.5 lengths. Miss Tehran is a length clear to the third place finisher. So in the field of five, you had the Chad Brown exacta. And as I say, it looked like at worst it would be a Chad Brown exacta, and it was. And it was not a big exacta. It was, $3.90 for a couple of bucks. So you didn't wind up getting rich in there. But again, you had the short price favorite over the second choice, a couple of Chad Brown runners, five horse field. So you weren't going to get rich. You didn't get rich in there. But it played out fairly logically, at least as far as I was concerned. I thought those were the two that you had to take the look at. And that's, again, the way it kind of played out. All right, let's move down to Churchill, because they had some interesting stakes yesterday as well. We will start things out looking at the Harrods Creek. These are three-year-olds sprinting 7 furlongs. And I like Bob's Edge. Bob's Edge is the number three horse, winds up fourth as a lukewarm 3-1 favorite. But we get some numbers across the board here, first, second, and third. 12-1, 12-1, and 18-1. It's number 10, Everett Song, over number 4. He's My Honey Badger. Number 2, Ram, runs third. As you can see, it's kind of wide open here as they get to about the 8th pole and beyond. But then the winner, Everett Song, kind of separates out. Chart margin winds up to be 2.75 lengths. And as they say, you got prices right along there. 10-4-2, $27 on the winner. The 10-4 exacta pays $2.96. The 50 cent try, $600, as Everett's Song gets it done. The horse, it was one of those that after the race you kind of went, it could have played around with that a little bit. And it was interesting. And again, I'm not redboarding here because I didn't use the horse. And I'm saying he could have looked up the board and maybe at the price in the scenario made a case there. The horse was going to have to step it up a little bit. And let me see if the buyer we did get, I'm curious on that. 89. So the horse did step it up buyer-wise. Hadn't been out of the 70s buyer figure-wise. But it was a lightly raced horse for Dale Bennett. Had been racing in the Mid-Atlantic, Delaware, and a couple of wins most recently at Pimlico. But Dale Bennett said afterwards, they interviewed him in the winner's circle, he said, yeah, we were thinking Pennsylvania Derby, but that seemed like a tall task for the horse with only 3 sprint starts so far. So they made clearly the right call, but it was also one of those where coming in from Pimlico off the nice last 2 wins, as I say, you could have looked at that and said, kind of an interesting horse to play around with at 12-1. Got it done nicely, so they have a nice little three-year-old. It'll be interesting to see, what they do next with this one. Only 4 starts so far, and as I say, Dale Bennett, the trainer, was kind of thinking, maybe Pennsylvania Derby. So they had some ambitions for this horse. Probably made the right move yesterday trying this one, stretched out $275,000 purse. They stretched from the six furlongs in the first three starts to seven furlongs yesterday and get it done with an improved buyer figure, as they say. So lightly raced three-year-old. Looks like they have plenty of options with this one to go forward. And again, it was probably the right call there for Dale Bennett in the Harrods Creek yesterday at Churchill Downs. Before that, it was the Bourbon Trail. I like King Fury. I like King Fury earlier this year. I thought the win in the Lexington, the comeback in the Lexington, I thought was really good. Subsequently, the Ohio Derby wasn't bad. The close-up second to Masquerade. Then, of course, the Ken McPeak barn had the situation with the quarantine up at Saratoga, and so they come back. Their only option to prep for the Travers is on the grass. That didn't go well necessarily, and then the fifth place finish in the Travers. So it seemed like maybe, you know, hit the reset button, come back in this Bourbon Trail, mile and 360 down at Churchill. And so I thought King Fury had the opportunity to maybe get back to what we saw in the Lexington to start the year. That's the way it played out. King Fury here is going to be a very convincing 1-2 winner. King Fury's the number four horse. Bourbon Thunder, I had right underneath and was the logical alternative to me. Runs second, but a well-beaten second. Dr. Jack third, but King Fury just looked absolutely fabulous yesterday. It's going to be interesting to see what the game plan is going forward. Solid 98 buyer figure for this one, which is, yes, a lifetime best buyer, and did it very well at Churchill, where the horse was 2-for-3 before, so now 3-for-4 overall down at Churchill. So King Fury getting back on track again after, as I say, having shown some really nice promise a little bit earlier this year in the Lexington, and then the summer didn't quite play out. Again, the Ohio Derby was okay, but certainly the situation up at Saratoga didn't quite go as planned, but managed to get back on track and get back on track with an exclamation point yesterday at Churchill. King Fury for Ken McPeak. Finally, the Dogwood yesterday at Churchill. Caribbean Caper, nice runner for Al Stahl. Nice little three-year-old sprinting filly for Al Stahl, who was 4-for-4 in the career, including a stake last time at Ellis Park. She was the 2-to-5 favorite yesterday at Churchill. And again, won like a 2-to-5 shot should. Caribbean Caper is the number two horse. Someone said so, the number seven second. Malloy runs third. But again, at 2-to-5, it is Caribbean Caper getting it done for Al Stahl to run the record to 5-for-5. She fires a solid 90 buyer figure, her career best as well. Very lightly raced, 5-for-5, three-year-old filly. So again, another that we saw on the day yesterday with a lot of potential. Going to be fun to see where some of these horses pick as their next spots. If they can keep rolling the way they did yesterday, again, with impressive results from some of the expected horses. Not everything was expected yesterday. There was a $219 winner at Parks. It didn't all play out chalky looking at the races yesterday at the various venues. But before we go to the break, I mentioned it. I wanted to pull up the Bold Venture yesterday from Woodbine, because it's the venerable Pink Lloyd, 9-year-old now, a few years ago, was the Sovereign Horse of the Year, I believe. But the last 4 years has been the Sovereign Award winner for Sprinter of the Year. This year, he was 0-for-2. A couple of second-place finishes. Only two starts so far. And again, don't forget, they had the delayed start up in Canada. But Saturday came back in the Bold Venture, had won the Bold Venture last year. So it was just fun to, you know, see and watch and root for the 9-year-old Pink Lloyd, trained by Robert Tiller on our trips up to Canada. We've had the chance to talk to Robert Tiller and interview him for the programming here about Pink Lloyd. Pink Lloyd back on Saturday. We'll watch the stretch run here. Pink Lloyd, the number four horse, went off as about the even money favorite and does get it done. It's a battle, but Chart margin is 3/4 of a length. You can see getting a challenge on the outside from Lucky Curlin, the Mark Cassie trainee, but Pink Lloyd will not let that one go by, and again winds up 3/4 of a length as the winner. Second year in a row winning the Bold Venture. Now, a victory in a couple of seconds and 3 starts this year, but as I say, the venerable Pink Lloyd, 9 years old, so just fun to see him out there still performing and performing well in a graded stakes race up at Woodbine, running his record to 27 for 35. That's incredible. Well over $1.5 million. In fact, with yesterday's performance, has to be over approaching $1.75 million. So the millionaire, the 9-year-old Pink Lloyd, getting it done yesterday up at Woodbine. We'll come back. We'll take a look when we come back at a few of the Parks races. I saved the main body of those for our visit with Steve Bick a little bit later on. But as I say, when we come back, we will take a look at some of the earlier stakes on the Parks card, the great Pennsylvania Derby card, the Cotillion. I think it lived up to expectations. They had a great day yesterday at Parks. Hats off to everybody there. Thanks to John DeSilva. He joined us yesterday. He's down at Parks now. And he joined us yesterday for the handicapper support to go through the card. So thanks to John for his help yesterday. But it was fun to be in here yesterday afternoon on OTB Live to kind of watch the card and go through the card with a good mix of chalk and prices to keep things exciting during the afternoon yesterday. And we'll review some of those stakes when we come back. Stay tuned. Racing Across America continues.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
And I always like to say that commercial reminds me, if you know folks after the Saratoga season who maybe came up and visited and enjoyed Capital OTB during the Saratoga season and then went home and said, man, wish we had this at home, remind them that they can pull it up via the Roberts channel, a sub-channel there on Roku. So you can watch us wherever you are via the Roku stick there. So again, remind folks that maybe enjoy us when they're here for Saratoga and then miss us when they go back home to wherever they go. They don't have to miss us anymore. I heard, I actually got a lot of great feedback from folks who do watch us. We went on Roku right at the very end of last year, the beginning of this year, and immediately had some emails that people were enjoying it, found us on the Roberts channel, and were enjoying the programming. But up at Saratoga, I ran into, there was a couple of New Jersey guys right at the end of the meet that wanted to take a picture, and I'm always amazed when that happens, but I was talking and how are you watching, and they were watching on Roku, and I heard throughout the Saratoga meet, people who had found us on Roku and enjoyed the programming at various venues outside of the local area here. So we appreciate everybody who is doing that maybe this morning. But as I say, spread the word if there are folks you know who maybe haven't caught on to that yet. All right, let's again take a look at some of the earlier stakes at Parks on just a really fun day yesterday down at Parks. And I pulled up Dave Grenig's article yesterday that mentioned a one-day record for all sources handle at Parks. They had $13.799 million. So a big day, understandably, a great card, great betting card with lots of opportunities. They had to carry over in that mandatory pay pick five. And, you know, as I say, a mix of prices and chalk. And I think it was a fun day to play along down at Parks. And the handle certainly indicates that the betting public agreed. Sixth race at Parks yesterday was the Plum Pretty for Statebreds, and Chub Wagon was certainly the one that was going to attract attention. Another one of those horses that was just fun to watch on the day. Chub Wagon, 9 wins in 10 career starts, a mix of statebred races and open races. Vault to me looked like the logical alternative. Another horse that had bounced between open company and statebred stakes races. But, you know, Chub Wagon with that gaudy 9-for-10 records, 5-for-6 at Parks, that was the one that folks were focused on. And Chub Wagon here is going to be the number 6 horse. Vault, as I say, the alternative is the number 1. Marion Francis, number 7, runs third. It winds up to get close here at the end. Vault makes a run. I don't know whether you were ever really sweating. I suppose if you had the horse, but it the wire's getting so close that I'm not sure you ever really had a doubt. It would have been fluky if Vault had enough momentum to get up, because as I say, with the camera, you knew you were getting fairly close to the wire. But it does wind up being a half length. So the margin certainly got closer. About the 16th pole, you were probably thinking you were home free, and it did get a little bit closer than that. But Chub Wagon, impressive win yesterday to run the record to now 10-for-11 career starts there. So again, congratulations to that one on just an absolutely fabulous career. Yesterday's purse had to put the horse over $500,000 in earnings, again in 11 career starts. So a nice little Pennsylvania bred gets it done yesterday in the Plum Pretty, kicking off stakes action. The Pennsylvania Dirt Mile, this was one of the more fun races on the card. When you talk about, I said about the 16th pole, you thought Chub Wagon was home. If you had Silver State yesterday in the Parks Dirt Mile, I feel your pain. I had Silver State as my top pick and Mind Control right underneath. But Silver State, who won the Met Mile 2 races back and third last time in the Whitney behind Nixco and Maxfield. So Silver State, legit from Steve Asmussen. And you thought you were home free. I mean, anybody who watched the race is thinking this one is over. Silver State is the number 6 horse, has the momentum, will go by number 3, Mind Control. And as I say, you think it's over. John Velasquez after the race said, the horse didn't give up and I didn't give up. And Mind Control comes back. Santana thought maybe his horse, Silver State, saw something. He said the horse seemed to react and pull up. And you can see here, maybe stops a little bit, stops the momentum. That gives Mind Control all he needs to keep going and get up when the race was over. But Mind Control, now in the barn of Todd Pletcher, coming out of a fourth place finish last time behind Yalpon and Frenzy Fire in the forego, gets it done with, again, just kind of a mind-blowing effort there, given the situation, 100 yards from the wire. You thought that one was over. But Mind Control gets the victory, Silver State second, and it was Warriors Charge for 10 Strike and Marshall Graham and company running third in there. But again, boy, really nice performance from Mind Control. Never say die, just kept coming and gets up in the shadow of the wire to steal victory from the jaws of defeat. Mind Control winds up with a 104 buyer figure. And we will also take a look at the mile and a half Greenwood Cup. It is going to be Magic Michael getting it done. And I said yesterday, a lot of on these big days, and Magic Michael is going to be the number four horse here, getting up late. Last Samurai second, Sheer Flattery third. And we're actually watching them. This is the stretch run, the first time, because it is a mile and a half race. So we'll watch them go around. But I talked about this race yesterday and said on these big days at like the next level circuits, oftentimes you will see either a winner from the hometown heroes or at least a horse that comes in and hits the board at a price. And I think that may have been the case with Magic Michael. A Jamie Ness trainee, Jamie Ness, high percentage down there at Parks, and Magic Michael trains down at Parks. Ships around the last few races were at other venues for Magic Michael, but based down at Parks, and overall Magic Michael has had seven starts at Parks, six wins in a second. So again, Magic Michael does fit into that kind of hometown hero category, and on these big days you often see that happen. And you can see him here sitting at the back of the pack, but he's going to make a nice late run under Frankie Pennington. So again, it's local hero connections. Jamie Ness, a great meet down at Parks. Frankie Pennington, a great meet down at Parks. And again, Magic Michael, though shipping around for a number of races this year, is based down at Parks. Going to make the nice late run, get it done. The favorite was Moretti, the number three horse, and you can see Moretti just not really firing. Moretti is going to wind up fifth in here. Last Samurai at 23-1, the nine horse runs second. Number seven, Sheer Flattery, the number seven at 10-1 runs third. But an $11 mutual on the outside here, you can see him coming, and in the shadow of the wire, will get up to get it done. Magic Michael in the Greenwood Cup. Nice performance again. As I say, sometimes those hometown heroes do tend to make things happen on the big days at the, again, kind of the next level circuit. So congratulations to the connections there. And we had mentioned when we talked to John DeSilva yesterday, I asked him for folks who maybe aren't normally watching Parks and are going to be playing some of the undercard races in particular. I said, who are some of the human elements down there to watch at Parks on a regular basis? And Frankie Pennington's name came up, and Jamie Ness's name, of course, came up as well. So they get it done there in the Greenwood Cup, mile and a half. And I don't know whether I had a buyer number. I think, let me see if I had the buyer number over here. For Magic, yeah, 94 buyer for Magic Mike in the Greenwood Cup, the mile and a half event on the card yesterday. Before we go to a break, and again, I'm saving some of the bigger races down at Parks for our discussion with Steve Bick. Well, he'll join us in a few minutes. And again, he had the radio show down there at Parks, so I thought we'd jump in and get some live comments after a big day down at Parks. But I do want to alert you to Belmont today. And again, I'll be back on in a couple hours with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. So this will be in our sights. But I've been talking about yesterday and some of the horses that we were excited to see run, all kinds of potential, and for the most part lived up to all of that yesterday. Well, there's a couple of horses that'll be fun to watch this afternoon as well in the Gallant Bloom at Belmont Park. Five-horse field scheduled. We talked with Riley Mott yesterday on Racing Across America and talked a little bit about Lake Avenue, who been the bridesmaid the last three starts, but in some pretty good events. You know, you go back a close-up second in the Honorable Miss behind Bell's the One, who was very talented, and last time second in the Ballerina behind Gamine. And I'm talking Lake Avenue in the Gallant Bloom for Bill Mott and company. So it's going to be fun to see what she can do against the three-year-old trying older in stakes company. He has tried older in allowance company before. But Bella Sophia steps into a graded stake this afternoon against older after having won the grade one last time against three-year-old fillies in the test. And it did so very impressively up at Saratoga in only the fourth career start, 101 buyer. It was a 101 buyer for Lake Avenue last time, the second place finish in the Ballerina. So the game plan is, as they come into the stretch, these two face off, and let's see them throw down here. Bella Sophia and Lake Avenue, that's the ninth race this afternoon. The Gallant Bloom, looking forward to that one on the schedule for today. And again, as I say, I will be back in a couple hours with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. All right, we're going to go to a break. But as we go to a break, I'm going to pull up the last race yesterday from Arlington. And when I say the last race yesterday, I am pretty much talking literally the last race because Arlington, when you read the news reports, there is still, a slim chance that Arlington will come back racing. But it's the slimmest of slim chances. So the last race yesterday, and you will hear, we'll go into the break with the full race and the race call, and you hear John Dooley remark that this is it for Arlington, and that does look like it is going to be the situation. Sister Ruler will go down in the record books then as the last winner at Arlington. Sad, because it's really one of the A-level tracks in America, has been for a long time. The Arlington Million, of course, one of the more iconic races on the racing scene in America for 20 years or whatever. So it was a little bit sad yesterday as they wrap things up. I think you'll be able to pick it up. As they load in the gate on the replay, you can hear the crowd. And they start on the backstretch. I mean, they clearly have things mic'd up nearer the crowd. But the crowd was obviously, I didn't hear attendance, but I'm sure there was a big crowd for the final day. And you could hear them and then hear them under the wire as well. But as I say, we'll go to the break and we will take a look at, unfortunately, the last race at Arlington Park. When we come back, my Sunday morning Saratoga season colleague, Steve Bick, all of that right after this. Stay tuned.
And they're off. As 94 years of history comes to a close today, and Sister Ruler rockets right out. Good speed there from Golden Command. In between horses, up to engage Sister Ruler with Dawn's Dancer, a well-spotted third, heading toward the half-mile pole. With toward the inside, Juju Special Girl in the black silks, who's joined on the outside. As they go past the half-mile pole by Belle Breezing, they enter the far turn. The quarter in 22.21 seconds, it's Sister Ruler. But now on the far side of the Arlington course, which hosted the first $1 million thoroughbred race, and it's Sister Ruler who just leads Golden Command as Dawn's Dancer starts to make her move for Rocco Bowen as Sister Ruler spins them in for one more time, and Juju Special Girl looks to gain toward the inside as they come into this final furlong. It's Sister Ruler, Dawn's Dancer, Juju Special Girl looking to make a winning split, but in tight quarters they're close to home. Sister Ruler, Dawn's Dancer, Juju Special Girl, Sister Ruler will be the last winner as Arlington closes its chapter in American racing history.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. As I promised, top of the show and before the break, joined now by my Sunday morning Saratoga season colleague on Loose on the Lead and the host of SiriusXM's At the Races, Steve Bick. He was at Parks this week, end of the week, to lead into the Pennsylvania Derby card. Steve, good morning.
Sap, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Where are you? There's a Ferris wheel behind you.
You can't figure out where I am.
With a Ferris wheel, Philly. No, I don't know.
All right, I'm gonna turn this way.
Atlantic City.
Jesus, I tell you what.
Boardwalk.
You know, if you ever left, if it was possible for you to ever leave the Capital District, you might recognize that I'm at Coney Island.
Oh.
And that's the Wonder Wheel behind me. I'm on my way to Belmont.
Okay.
And I wasn't going to get to Belmont for 10:40. So I said, you know what? I'm going to stop at Coney Island. It's off season. But I tell you what, there's a lot of activity. There's like some sort of a walking thing going on the boardwalk. And Nathan's is open. The clam bar, maybe a hot dog. We'll see. But I thought this would be a fun stop.
I have to admit, I've never been to Coney Island, so it didn't immediately jump off the page at me. But I appreciate the venue there. Before we get started, I think I've mentioned it on the radio show to you. I know I texted you certainly, and I have mentioned it here on television, but I haven't had a chance to congratulate you on television yet. The National Turf Writers and Broadcasters, their annual voting was completed a few days ago. And it was announced that you, Steve Bick, host of Sirius and XM's At the Races, you will get the Jim McKay Award for Career Excellence in Broadcasting. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to say on television, congratulations. Well deserved.
Thanks very much, Seth. I appreciate it. It's a great honor, recognition by colleagues and peers. And it was actually, I think it was actually your vote that put me over the top.
And I voted right at the beginning, too. The ballot came out. I was in immediately, and I put you on the ballot, as well as our buddy Lenny Shulman. He's going to get an award, too.
Yep.
John Shear, the incredible story there as well. And Dan Smith also getting an award. So you're in with a fine class, and you will get the award Breeders' Cup week. They have a dinner. So, again, congratulations. And I wanted to touch on one other thing before we got to Parks. As we went into the break, I pulled up the last race yesterday from Arlington, which was literally the last race at Arlington. And I wonder what your thoughts were. And I'm sure over the last, 2 weeks, month or so, folks on the radio were maybe commenting on it. What were the feelings as far as, Arlington wrapping up after, having a venerable place on the American racing scene?
Well, first of all, let's wait and see where this story goes, because it may not be entirely over yet, and they're not going to race there next year. But there were other periods. There was the 2-year hiatus going back to the 90s. This is a very strange situation, and I know the impetus is to, to blame Churchill Downs for the situation. They're certainly responsible for, what seems like a scenario where the property will be sold for development, potentially for the Chicago Bears to bring a new stadium there. But there are so many other things that went into this over the last 20 years that if you were following the story, it's hard to believe that he actually arrived at this situation. It started with the riverboats 20 years ago in Illinois, and money that was being basically held for distribution to the standardbred and thoroughbred industry in the Chicagoland area and in Illinois overall. And there was essentially a constant fight by the gambling interest, by the casino interest, to never give that money to the horsemen and to the racing interest. There was $130 million that essentially was held by Springfield through a series of political administrations, downstate and in Chicago. And it's just impossible that the thing got to this situation. There were so many different occasions where the very various racetrack interests were going to get their piece of the gambling dollars. That included Maywood Park and Balmoral for the standardbreds, and Hawthorne and Arlington for the flats, for the thoroughbreds. The way and the twists and the turns of all this, it is really bizarre, and it never should have gotten to this point. And you know, for years, Churchill absolutely wanted to get gaming at Arlington. And then when the opportunity actually arose to buy the license and to apply, they passed because the shifting sands had given them the opportunity to invest in that casino 10 miles away, Rivers. And so now they basically felt like there's no reason to have a competing casino 10 miles from the one that they're heavily invested in. So are they villains in this? Yeah, they are. But they're far from the only villain, and it never should have gotten to this point to begin with. In the meantime, while everybody is bemoaning Arlington, why don't we applaud the Carey family across town in Cicero, in Stickney, who persevered and are going to build a gaming facility at Hawthorne. And Hawthorne is going to host standardbred and thoroughbred racing going forward in Chicago. And that should be the focus, as opposed to understandably feeling bad about Arlington, you know, not going forward, and this beautiful facility that is seemingly going to be, you know, ultimately go to waste. But this is a complex story. It's not one-dimensional. It is sad and frustrating because Illinois racing and breeding interests could have been so far ahead of things with where they are. But this is not, you know, this is not a one-liner or a story that's told simply. There's a lot to it. We'll see what the next chapters are.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're right to kind of bring up the history of it, because if folks watched Illinois racing, and as you say, the casino, the competing interest, the riverboats and whatnot, that's been a story, an ongoing story for years now. And you bring up also the folks at Hawthorne are very enthusiastic. So they got the dates for next year in that Chicago area. We'll certainly be rooting for them. Speaking of rooting for, rooted for Parks yesterday. They had a very big day. And let's start in and work our way back from the Pennsylvania Derby. I love your comments. I was in yesterday afternoon. We'll watch the stretch run here. It will be number 7, Hot Rod Charlie, turning into the stretch, floating Midnight Bourbon out a little bit. Coming up for third, the New York bred number 10, American Revolution. Nice performance for that one. Stewards looked at it a long time. I said yesterday I would have slightly gone for maybe switching the order of finish and changing things up, because I think Midnight Bourbon did lose momentum with the move out, the float out here from Hot Rod Charlie. But I think eventually the margin of victory was enough that the stewards said you had the whole stretch to go by, and they left the order of finish as it was. So it was Hot Rod Charlie over Midnight Bourbon, American Revolution third. What were your thoughts in the Pennsylvania Derby?
Well, for starters, let's identify that these two horses, given he ended up with a 111 buyer for the winner and a 107 for Midnight Bourbon, these two horses separated themselves from that field. Anybody else that, you know, we were considering and thought, oh, this horse could jump up, and that was kind of foolhardy in retrospect. These two clearly are just better than everybody else. We'll see next week about Medina Spirit and the rest of the three-year-olds. And, of course, Elusive Quality is going to wait until Breeders' Cup. But the fact is, one thing was defined, and that's how good the top-level three-year-olds are. We're going to look at the Gallant Bob in a minute. You know, you can fold in Jackie's Warrior 2, a 110 buyer. So the best three-year-olds in this crop are really, really good. And make no mistake, I mean, this is a nice group of horses. Now, when you want to talk about what went on at the top of the stretch, I personally, if I'm in the steward stand, I probably leave it alone. However, it would have been absolutely justifiable to take him down. And you know, the stewards need to shut up. And some of the things that they said were just preposterous, including suggesting that one option for Santana was, well, you could have gone inside. Shut up. It's not your business to tell a jockey how they were supposed to adjust to a potential foul. What are they talking about? That's the craziest thing I ever heard. And also this whole nonsense about, oh, you had the whole stretch to get by. You got to be kidding. You interrupted the horse's momentum. You took him out of the path that he was traveling. He was doing nothing wrong. This is an ongoing issue that's not confined to Pennsylvania stewards or New York stewards or California stewards. The only place where they seem to penalize this herding technique is at Woodbine, where, if you remember, Javier Castellano got like a month for his antics in a grade one years ago up there when he was herding. The only way to stop it is for stewards to start to disqualify these horses. And, you know, you also had, we're not going to talk about the race, but go back to the Plum Pretty, where Chub Wagon, you know, the really interesting and game, nearly perfect filly, she actually, I thought, could have been taken down as well. You know, you got a whole school of thought that says, well, leave the best horse up and just find the jockey. That's, you know, this whole Category 1, Category 2 discussion. I would have understood if they switched the order of finish. I kind of leaned, after watching it, you know, 10 times, I kind of leaned to leaving it alone, but it was a very narrow scenario. And, you know, Hot Rod Charlie, okay, they get their grade one. You know, this horse is, you want to talk a little star-crossed, then it would have been crazy had he been taken down. But the two performances were very, very good. And I don't know, you know, I think you're going to have a real exciting lead up now to the Breeders' Cup Classic. I mean, because these horses match up very well with the existing handicap division horses. We're going to see some of the West Coast ones, obviously, coming up in the Awesome Again with Medina Spirit. And in New York, if you heard Dave Grenig with me on Friday, we've got a tremendous Woodward shaping up with a half a dozen top, all the best horses that you'd want in the Woodward. So everything is pointing to a real showdown in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and that's what you want.
Absolutely. And I'll reiterate again, because it's worth pointing out, a 111 buyer yesterday in the Pennsylvania Derby. And I'm pretty much, I think, listening to you where you are, both of those races, going back to Chub Wagon, was almost a coin flip for me. Chub Wagon, I would have left. I had no argument there. Hot Rod Charlie, I think I would have taken down, because I'm like you. People were saying, and I get it, and I think that's what the stewards hung their hat on. Hey, he had the whole stretch to get by and lost a little ground late. But he was making momentum, which changed the dynamics of the race. If they turn for home and he goes eye to eye or maybe puts a head in front, he maybe discourages Hot Rod Charlie, where Hot Rod Charlie pulling away at the top of the stretch, the opposite scenario plays out.
That's exactly right. And the same thing, you know, the same thing is true when you have incident out of the gate and the stewards say, the horse had the entire rest of the race to... that's the nuttiest methodology ever. The entire race flow, the entire dynamics, and you use the right word, dynamics, the whole, everything changes. So I would have understood a DQ. You've got that great policy of, you know, 60-40, 50-50. You know, this was like a 55-45.
That was exactly my number. I went 55-45. I would have taken it down, but it wasn't egregious either way. But all right, let's go back to the Cotillion, because it was another nice field of three-year-olds, this time on the three-year-old filly side. I've liked Clairiere all year long, all throughout her career. And so I was kind of married to her, and I used her yesterday. I thought she looked really good yesterday. I had Riley Mott on Racing Across America yesterday morning, talking about some of the Mott runners yesterday. and some we've seen win over the past few weeks as well, Warlike Goddess and Baby Yoda and whatnot. But Obligatory, I thought, was a very nice second in here, coming out of the fifth place finish last time in the test and a little bit of an unknown at the two turns. Army Wife is going to run third, but it's a chart margin of 2.5 lengths for number six, Clairiere. Gets it done for Steve Asmussen with a 93 buyer figure. What were your thoughts on the Cotillion?
Well, she ran exceptionally well, and this is a big win for her.
Yeah,
she'd been kind of nibbling in a lot of the good races all year long, and so getting a grade one, the last major opportunity at two turns for the 3-year-old filly exclusive company, this is a mammoth win. And what was most impressive with her yesterday was that she basically closed into a laughable pace. I mean, for grade one fillies going a mile and a 16th, for them to go a minute and 13 and change, I mean, it was nuts. Close to 25 seconds for the opening quarter, close to 50 seconds, or maybe it was 50 seconds for the half. I mean, this was a dawdling pace. So the horses that were up on the front end, they have no excuse. And, you know, here was Clairiere sitting about mid-pack, a little further back than mid-pack, fifth, sixth. And, you know, all credit, certainly, in this spot to Santana, who, you know, recognized the pace scenario, started to move well before the turn, got within striking distance. And then she, you know, when she straightened up around the eight pole, I mean, she just kind of stormed home. And it was obvious that she was going to be the easiest kind of winner in the end. I thought she ran exceptionally well, but anybody that wanted to come from off the pace was completely compromised by just a shockingly slow early fractions.
Yeah, flatters Malathat after having run second turn in the Alabama in the previous race, but Clairiere gets it done on Saturday in the Cotillion. Let's turn one race earlier. It was a fun day, at various venues with the horses that you were waiting to see. Another great performance from, because they'd done so well earlier, and one of those yesterday was Jackie's Warrior, who in multiple race plays was a free square for probably just about everybody. $2.10 was the payoff for Jackie's Warrior yesterday in the Gallop Bob. We're watching him turn for home here, just kind of galloping out on the lead. The chart margin winds up to be just under 7 lengths, a 110 buyer figure, but this lived up to that old saying, paid workout yesterday in the Gallant Bob for Jackie's Warrior.
Well, he did have some company early on, and he shrugged that off without major effort, and then powers away. And, you know, one thing that Rosario does, Luis Saez does this well, you know, any good front-end rider, you know, don't try to rate speed horses on the lead. You use their speed and make any of the horses that are trying to stalk or trying to come from off the pace, make them work hard to stay in contact with you. You basically take the starch out of them. And, you know, it's funny. I thought there was a terrific opportunity. The Kelly Breen horse was really the only horse I thought, and I'm forgetting his name, that was going to come from off the pace, and he ended up being the longest shot on the board, and I bet him heavily.
Picking time.
Yeah, and that was the scenario, because, you know, Jackie's Warrior was a free square, but trying to make some money, and actually the exacta paid $26, and there was a way to leverage here, but anyway, Jackie's Warrior is spectacular. I mean, not good, not a nice sprinter. You know, they lost Yoppen, obviously, career ended the other day. So Steve Asmussen goes into the Breeders' Cup sprint with just an absolute terror. I mean, this horse, it could not have been more impressive. Geared down for the last eighth of a mile and still 108 on that racetrack. That racetrack is a slow, heavy racetrack invariably. And for him to do that, super impressive. He's tremendous.
Coming out of the battle last time with the Life is Good in the Jerkins, and Life is Good yesterday kind of validated his talent in the Kelso, although that was not much of a field, but he did it the way he was supposed to do. So flattered the performances up in Saratoga. And one more race I wanted to look at, and I had alluded to it earlier. I took a look at some of the other. I took a look at Chubb Wagon and Mind Control. The comeback for Mind Control was amazing, but I looked at those earlier in the program. But one more I wanted to talk about with you was the Turf Monster, the ninth race yesterday. And we'll see the stretch run here. It will be number 11, Hollywood Talent, getting it done. At 108-1, $219 mutual payoff for number 11, Hollywood Talent. And I'm just wondering what the buzz was around the track after a $200-plus victory on a big stakes day.
Well, everybody was sort of amused, and everybody was kind of like rolling their eyes and a little bit agog. I mean, clearly Beer Can Man, who came running late, you know, for Mark Blatt to come from California with that horse, that was a big tell. And he ran a very nice race. But the 10-year-old son of Talent Search, this was crazy. I got to tell you, the people that are at Parks, they weren't sure that this horse was going to pass the vet this week. I mean, this is a 10-year-old. Is one of these horses that you got to go warm him up a lap or two, to shake the rust off every time he comes out. And he had, one of those flashback moments and absolutely came running. It was quite amusing. And Juan Vasquez and the family, Vasquez, he's good with these types. And I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, this was a horse that had, in the PPs had races that would be competitive, but he's a horse that you just, unless you hit the all button, and there were people that did hit the all button in this race because they knew that you were going to be able to go narrow the rest of the way for the most part. I mean, you had favorites, then short favorites win out the next four races, but it was amusing to say the least. I was with Lee Einsiedler, and Lee's like, this horse is 99-1. I looked at the board before they left. He's 99-1. Who knows? He could be 200-1. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, and they had a $90 winner earlier on the card. So then Jackie's Warrior, $2.10. They set an single day per handle record down there. It was a fun day all around with the results at Parks and Life is Good up in New York. Pink Lloyd, I showed him winning up at Woodbine. Also, speaking of venerable older horses, the 9-year-old. So it was a fun day yesterday, and congratulations to the folks at Parks. But wanted to reach out at you because I know you're doing the radio show down there, and I appreciate your stop over at Coney Island. I feel like I should be slapping on some suntan lotion while we're talking, so I appreciate the visit to Coney Island. And as always, appreciate the conversation as well.
My pleasure, Seth. Heading over to Belmont and then home. And Tina's in Rochester with the baby, and nice few days.
Yeah.
Down to Belmont today, and then Philly, and great weekend, and things are rolling. Plenty more action, and start to really focus in on Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, looking forward to listening to the radio show and getting that lead up to Breeders' Cup. And again, congratulations on the Career Excellence Award from the National Thoroughbred Writers and Broadcasters. Again, as I say, well deserved. Steve, thanks for the visit.
Thanks, Sal. I owe it all to you.
Thank you. Very good. All right, we'll wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Again, it was a fun day of racing yesterday. Hopefully everybody had fun watching and rooting along and hopefully made some money. As I say, if you were following the one sheet yesterday, had the 8-bagger at Belmont. I'm not sure I can repeat that today, but we will be trying, and I'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. Looking forward to that. Don't forget, here at the Clubhouse Racebook today, it's an NFL Sunday. Watch all the football action, all the racing action as well every Sunday here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. I will wrap it up. I'm looking around to see if I have anything else in my notes, and I don't. I think we covered everything. It was a fun, fast hour, as always, on a Sunday morning Racing Across America, so we'll wrap it up. And again, I'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV. a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.